Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. I'm joined by the producer extraordinaire, Louis Prejean, and we are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over there, 24-hour sports coverage. And you can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We appreciate you making us part of your morning, and we're not going to let you down today. We got a tremendous show lined up for you. Great way of kicking off your weekend. I know there's no LSU this weekend. I know the Raging Cajuns are playing way out in Statesboro, Georgia. But we got you covered from all the angles. Got a tremendous show lined up for you today. We got Eric Narcisse going to break down all things preps for us. That's going to be later in today's show, third hour, 8 o'clock hour. We'll also be talking to Mike Dettillier, the college and pro football analyst. Going to talk LSU. He's going to talk New Orleans Saints with us. We also have the Black and Gold Report with John J. Hendricks. That'll be coming up in hour number two. And we got a special guest that'll be joining us, soon to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, a Raging Cajun football legend and one of the best to ever suit up in the National Football League, Charles Tillman. Peanut Tillman will be joining us right here on RP3 and Company. But let's start things off with the Who Dats, because LSU may be on bye, and the Raging Cajuns have a big game, but they may be on the road. But the Saints are going to be right here in the state of Louisiana. They'll take on the Dallas Cowboys Sunday night football. You can listen to that game courtesy of Westwood One right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll have the triple header of football action for you from the NFL this Sunday. And we'll close things out, obviously, with the Sunday night game. Saints versus Cowboys. Remember, this was a game from a year ago, which was the infamous 13-10 game. Cowboys beat the Saints. Drew Brees looked human. The offense looked putrid. And somehow the Cowboys found a way to score 13 points and win the game. Now, what do we think about this weekend's matchup? Well, look, Dallas is 3-0. Dak Prescott's playing at a high level. They got Zeke Elliott back. They got Amari Cooper. They got their weapons, and they got that salty defense. But who have they really beaten? Not a murderer's row by any stretch of the imagination. And it's going to be Sunday night, and it's going to be inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Once again, no Drew Brees, still out recovering from thumb surgery. But we did see Teddy Bridgewater play extremely efficient football on the road in the elements at Seattle, helping lead the Saints to a victory. Two touchdown passes, nearly 200 yards passing, no turnovers, no sacks. If Teddy has that kind of performance once again, and the offensive line plays well again, the Saints got a chance. They have a legitimate shot of beating the Cowboys. You know the Superdome is going to be absolutely bananas. It's going to be lit, as the kids say these days. I just got the thumbs up from Louis Prejean that the kids do say lit still. So I am hip. No, not so much. Not so much. So is this game, how big of a deal is this game? And I've asked that throughout the week. I think the Seattle game was a bigger deal, and this is why. You lose Brees against the Rams. You look lifeless the rest of the way. You look completely deflated. The offensive line struggled to pick up blocks. Wide receivers were dropping balls. Teddy looked a little bit timid back there. You couldn't run the ball, and then the defense started giving up big plays in the second half. It was more important to bounce back the next week. to get that momentum, to get that confidence that Teddy Bridgewater could be the quarterback while you were out, to prove that you could win on the road in the elements. The Seattle game is far bigger, was far bigger than this Sunday night's game. It just is for the Saints. Because once Drew went down, everyone was deflated, and probably a little panic and a lot of doubt probably started to seep in. But once they got 24 hours away from that game, they started game planning, going, okay, this is what we can do. We have to go, we stay out here on the West Coast. We have to travel up to Seattle, home of the 12th man, and see what we can do. And they went up there and they won. And the offensive line didn't give up a sack. And Teddy Bridgewater was very efficient. And Alvin Kamara had a huge game. Ran tough, especially in the second half. And the defense played well. Ish would be the best way to describe that. They still let Russell Wilson have well over 400 yards of all-purpose yardage. But they did enough to win. So now they turn their attention to the Cowboys. And the Saints are 2-1. And they know they have in their back pocket the fact that the NFC South is an absolute train wreck. It is awful. Have you seen the Bucks, the Falcons, and the Panthers play so far this year? If you haven't, don't. Your eyes will bleed. They are dreadful. Dreadful. So they play in a terrible division. They don't play those terrible teams. It's all on the back end of the regular season schedule. They will only have to face one of those awful teams, and that's Tampa Bay. That'll be a week from Sunday. The rest of them they'll play after Drew Brees is expected to return. So I've said this over and over again. They can be a 500 ball club while Drew is out and still be leading that division and still win that division. Would it be great for them on Sunday Night Football as the nation is watching and Sean Payton pulls something out of his hat once again and expand the playbook and expand what they can do with Teddy Bridgewater to take down the Cowboys on national television? Absolutely. It would be great if they won on Sunday. It would be amazing. Boom, 3-1. You've taken down Seattle and Dallas in the NFC. That'll go a long way to some tiebreakers later down the road when it comes to playoff positioning. But is it a must-win game? No. Because then you can bounce back and play Tampa. You still got to play Jacksonville. Oof. Okay. Chicago. Did the Bears scare you? They shouldn't. Have you watched Mitchell Trubisky throw the football? Not good. Not good. But they do face a Cowboys team that is talented, has talent on, especially on the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about the defense, it being salty, but they got the playmakers, they got the guys at the skill position, they got the fantasy football guys that you want to have on your team because they put up big points week in, week out. Zeke, Amari, and Dak. The veteran linebacker DeMario Davis for the New Orleans Saints talked about those playmakers for the Dallas Cowboys, starting off with the quarterback, Dak Prescott.
Really smart football player, knows where to go with the football, really good arm. Of course, he poses a threat with his legs, too. He can keep plays alive. I think he's doing a good job of doing what they asked him to do, keeping his team on track, protecting the football. They do so many different, give you so many different looks, and you know, they have so many weapons. He's doing a good job of getting the ball around.
A lot of respect there. There's not always a lot of respect for Dak Prescott across the National Football League. There should be. He's a very good quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. And they have three really good offensive players on that team. DeMario Davis talked about another one of those guys. That, of course, is a guy who's led the NFL in rushing, more than a few times in his short career already. And that, of course, is Ezekiel Elliott.
Zeke has proven to be one of the top, if not the top running back in the game. So, of course, they're going to give him the ball. And, you know what I'm saying, it's our job to try to find a way to stop him. But that can be challenged, you know. You know, it's just to be expected. When you got you know, one of the top running backs in the game, they're going to find ways to give him the ball.
That tells you right there that they are game planning for Zeke Elliott. I've been asking, what's the thing that the Saints defense needs to be the most concerned about? Is it Zeke, or is it stopping Dak Prescott, or is it shutting down Amari Cooper? The Saints defense seems to think, the players at least, that it's going to be Zeke Elliott and Von Bell, the starting safety, who scored a touchdown in last week's game at Seattle. Said as much, as he says, it all starts with Zeke on the Cowboys offense.
It starts with 21. We got to stop the run and eliminate the disposal passes off of, because Dak is doing a real good job finding guys down the field, and they're making plays for him. So we just got to stop the run and make everything just one-dimensional and just get out the field on third down and eliminate the efficiency on first and second down, so it won't be a breeze on third down. So we just got to know the situation and eliminate it.
So they know that as good as they have been against the run, I think the last time the Saints have allowed a 100-yard rusher in a game has been a year and a half, almost 2 years. Okay, so they do a good job of shutting down the rushing attack. But they know they're going to have their hands full against Zeke Elliott. Eli Apple, starting cornerback for the New Orleans Saints. He knows Zeke's formidable. But he also knows how good Dak Prescott is. And the Saints corner that lines up on the other side of the field from Marshawn Lattimore says that Prescott, he's great at making quick decisions, which means that's a challenge for the New Orleans Saints defense.
You just got to understand the concepts first, know how they're going to try to attack the defense. And with him, you can extend the play too. He's more decisive, I think, this year with his I think it's just his reads, is reading something and making something happen and being quick with his decision-making. So we got to be quicker.
We have to be quicker, because they've noticed when they've watched the tape that Dak himself has gotten quicker with the decisions with the football and getting rid of the football, most importantly. And that's going to be a change. They're going to have to make that adjustment. The Saints have not allowed anyone to go over 100 yards on them since November 19th, 2017 was the last time they gave up a 100-yard rusher in a ball game. So it's been a minute, so to speak. Zeke will be a problem. I still think it comes down to Dak. You can tell Dak is improving as a quarterback. He does get rid of the ball quicker. So that secondary is going to have its hands full. Now, if Davenport and Cam Jordan, if they can put pressure on Dak, make him throw some errant throws, get him out of his rhythm, that's going to be key to this game. But those DBs, Eli Apple, Marshawn Lattimore, Von Bell, they are going to have to play disciplined assignment football and stop looking like they're out of position and look like they're lost playing zone coverage. Once again, they face some tough competition to start the season. Lattimore is himself a slow starter. Has been even when he was a rookie, when he won Defensive Rookie of the Year. And to be fair to the Saints, they face Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. Week one. Then they face Jared Goff in the bevy of Rams wide receivers that can well go over 100 yards receiving. And then last week they face Russell Wilson, giving up more than, you know, nearly 150 yards to Tyler Lockett. Not great. But they face some high-powered offenses and some good quarterbacks. Very good quarterbacks. Three in a row. Now they get their fourth. So they've been tested. And you can guarantee that the Cowboys are going to come to town and they're going to try to attack that secondary of the New Orleans Saints. Whether or not the Saints secondary will be ready to step up, make those adjustments, also have, more importantly, Dennis Allen, the defensive coordinator, make his adjustments, which he does not always do, could be a huge factor in the Saints being able to win this game Sunday night versus the Dallas Cowboys. Once again, you can listen to the Saints versus Cowboys, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, right here on 103.7 The Game Sunday night. We're going to take our first timeout of the day. You listen to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. If you want to give us a call, feel free. Arco Equipment Hotline is open. Phone lines are open and ready to receive your phone calls. Just be nice to the man behind the glass, the man on the other side of the phone, other end of the phone, rather, Louis Prejean. You want to talk to us about Saints, Cowboys? Be happy to hear from you. You want to talk about LSU, your concerns with the defense, if any at all? You want to talk Raging Cajuns? We got you covered. But you can tell it is the bye week, ladies and gentlemen, for the LSU Tigers. You want to know why? So, the rumor started going around yesterday. Miles Brennan is transferring from LSU. When I first heard it, I was like, well, that sounds just absolutely ridiculous. But then, I do a little research. I see articles. LSU football practice report. Miles Brennan among those not in practice. I see another story. LSU backup quarterback reportedly absent from practice. And the rumor mill started going absolutely bananas. You looked on the Twitter machine, of course. No Miles Brennan for a second consecutive day. Ed Orgeron said yesterday that he'd be okay. Another tweet. LSU backup quarterback Miles Brennan reportedly absent from practice. Click on the link. Miles Brennan is absent from practice. Oh, my God. This is what happens when you're on a bye. There's nothing going on. Absolutely nothing going on. And then rumors just start because LSU fans or LSU reporters are bored. You know what's not uncommon to see at practice during a bye week? Players not being there, because that's the time that you use to have them be resting. You have them rest. You have them get treatment. Oh, it's the bye week. Not a big deal. You need to do some extra studying for your class. You're excused. Let's keep you academically eligible. That's important. Not uncommon whatsoever if you've ever covered a collegiate football team at any level. SEC, Southland, Sun Belt, Little Sisters of the Poor Conference. I don't care. Not uncommon to see it during the bye week. Just not a few players, but a handful to several players not take part in the midweek drills. Because there isn't a game to play for that week. But God forbid with the Miles Brennan thing. We so want there to be a quarterback controversy at LSU, don't we? You just want it to happen. We're trying to will it into existence. Miles Brennan didn't transfer out over a year ago when Justin McMillan left and went to Tulane and when another quarterback left to go elsewhere, did he? He didn't transfer out when he nearly won the starting job as a freshman and beat out Danny Etling only to serve as his backup and then was benched essentially last year and got no playing time. His father has come out to say he's committed to staying at LSU. He's committed to being the starting quarterback at LSU. The coaching staff loves him. He's put on extra weight. He's put on extra muscle. He is the backup quarterback for LSU. The offense is putting up record-setting numbers. Joe Burrow is graduating, which means the keys to the kingdom will be handed over to Miles Brennan. And yet we still want to manufacture this rumor that Miles Brennan is transferring out because we have nothing better else to do, Tiger fans and Tiger conspiracy theorists, on a bye week. So much so that Miles Brennan had to go to Twitter himself yesterday and say, in all caps, breaking news, colon, I'm not transferring, dot, dot, dot. Never have thought about it and don't see myself doing so. Stop trying to make Miles Brennan transfer out. He doesn't want to. Jesus, why is this still coming up? Ridiculous. Damn second bye week of the year. We got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Allows him to get out there and crush.
That ball is hit well to right field, and that ball is gone. Kyle Tucker, his fourth home run of the year. And the Astros on the board. It's now a 3-1 game. Tucker a home run in back-to-back nights.
That was one of the few highlights from last night's game for the Houston Astros. They actually lose the game 4-3 in 12 innings. The Angels, the Halos of Los Angeles County of Anaheim Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl, prevent the Astros from clinching home field advantage throughout the playoffs with a 4-3 win in 12 innings last night. Now, obviously, the Astros still have an opportunity to clinch home field advantage in the playoffs. They could do so tonight. But they still don't have their best pitchers either. Will they need them for this series against the Angels? Probably not. The Angels themselves made 9 pitching changes, including 7 in a 4-inning span last night. But they were able to grind it out for the win. Once again, Houston trying to lock up home field advantage throughout the playoffs in the American League. So they have to wait another day. Caleb Cowart scored when Kyle Tucker made an error on Andrelton Simmons' 2-out grounder in the 12th inning, and the Angels prevented the Astros from clinching home field advantage. Extra inning game. Josh Reddick had a game, tied his career high with his 5th hit in the 12th for the Astros, who stranded a season-high 17 runners on base. I didn't say 7. I didn't say 10. Add those two numbers together, and that's how many runners they stranded on base. 17. It was only the 2nd loss in 11 games for the Astros. But despite the loss, the Astros are 104-55 on the season. They are 2 games ahead of the Yankees, who did not play. They were idle last night for the AL's best record. Houston won 4-7 over New York during the regular season to claim the tiebreaker. The Astros, though, are only 1 game ahead of the Dodgers, who have clinched the NL's best record. Houston beat, if you remember, beat the Dodgers to win the 2017 World Series to claim its first championship, which they won Game 7 on the road. So if Houston can stay ahead of the Dodgers overall, they will also have home field advantage for the World Series. Tucker, you heard the home run for the young man there. Wade Miley was the starting pitcher. He had another mediocre performance. Gave up 5 hits and 3 runs in just 4 innings of work. The left-hander managed to get more than 3 outs for only the 2nd time in 5 starts this September. Something's wrong with Wade Miley, and I don't think it's mental. And this whole notion that all of a sudden people know how to hit his cutter. Something looks off. Something looks off. Miley said afterwards, quote, "There were a lot more positives than I've been getting. I never lost confidence. I just went through a little struggle," end quote. Hinch was asked what Miley's effort meant for his role in the postseason, which will begin a week from today with Game 1 of the American League Division Series. Quote, "We have a long time before we have to make any sort of decision. So after a walk-off loss, it's not going to be a time where I assess anything," end quote. Okay. let me break it down. The Astros can go with just a three-man rotation. They have Verlander, who's right now a 20-game winner. They have Garrett Cole, who's a 19-game winner. Those two guys are going to finish 1-2 in the Cy Young Award voting. Then they have Zach Greinke, a former Cy Young Award winner who finished the regular season as an 18-game winner. They really don't need Wade Miley all that much. They could set their rotation as being a three-man rotation. A lot of teams have started to go to that anyway. It would be nice to have Wade Miley. I call it a three-and-a-half-man rotation because once the postseason continues going, you don't use him all the time. Kind of a spot starter. So he's your, make it a three-and-a-half-man rotation. Hinch is a big Wade Miley fan. Big supporter of him. He's not looked great in September, though. But does A.J. Hinch still trust him enough to throw him out there in a postseason game? Does he have enough confidence in the former Southeastern Louisiana star to put him in a spot to win a ball game? Or is it one of those situations where they put him out there and they know, okay, we're going to lose a lot of our bullpen guys tonight? Could be. That could be the situation they go with. It could be the most ideal situation for them. Be interesting to see what happens there with Wade Miley, but they're set with the 1-2-3 pitchers. It was also announced yesterday, this happened prior to game one of this four-game set to end the regular season at the Halos for the Astros, that Carlos Correa, all-star shortstop, will sit out the final four games of the regular season to rest his stiff back. But Hinch is hopeful that he'll be ready for the division series. Carlos already had sat out Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. Okay? That cat cannot stay healthy. And here's the crazy thing. He's immensely talented. He's only like 25, 26 years old. As James Yasko told us yesterday from the Lima Time Time podcast, since the start of last year, he's missed like 44% of the games. Carlos Correa can't stay healthy. And yet, despite being an all-star and what he brings to the table with his glove and with his bat, he's a heck of a hitter. The Astros continue to find ways to win without him. I think they're already built a certain way that they can win and make a long postseason run without Carlos Correa. You have Alex Bregman, who's closing the gap in the MVP race with Mike Trout. You have a healthy Jose Altuve. You have Gurriel. You have Springer Dinger. You have Yordan Alvarez, who's going to be the American League Rookie of the Year, the 22-year-old out of Cuba. You have Josh Reddick, who's been coming on of late, more of a veteran bat. They can absorb the loss of Carlos Correa. So maybe Carlos is going to be a pinch hitter. Maybe he's going to be a spot starter in that lineup. You're not going to be dependent on Carlos, is my point, to win. It'd be great if he was healthy. It'd be great if he didn't have a stiff back. It'd be great if he, when he got massages, he didn't break ribs like he did earlier this season. First of all, one of the more bizarre stories I've heard ever. So Carrera's going to be shut down the rest of the way. Altuve was off last night for a day of rest. Do I think the Astros will still clinch home field advantage for the American League? And overall, yes. You know why I say that? You know why I have confidence in that? Because Justin Verlander's pitching Saturday. And then Garrett Cole is going to be pitching on Sunday. Garrett Cole is going to go for 20 wins on Sunday. Justin Verlander is going to try to get to 21 and keep racking up some strikeouts to make it immensely difficult for voters to pick who's going to win the Cy Young. Regardless, it will be a Houston Astro in the American League this year, ladies and gentlemen. It's just going to be either Verlander or Cole. And that should be a very, very close vote because you can make a strong case for either one. by the way, you can listen to those final two regular season games of the Houston Astros this weekend. Saturday, Astros at Angels. Pre-game, Astro launch will be at 7:35. First pitch will be at 8:07. You listen to that right here on 103.7 The Game. And then on Sunday for the regular season finale, Astros at Angels will be on our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Pre-game will start at 1:35, first pitch at 2:07. So you can listen to Verlander pitch on Saturday, Astros Angels, pregame 7:35, first pitch 8:07, right here on 103.7 The Game. And then Sunday you can hear Garrett Cole attempt to go for win number 20 in the regular season finale, Astros at Angels, pregame 1:35, first pitch 2:07. Remember, 103.7 Game, Delta Media is your home for Houston Astros baseball right here in Acadiana. We got to take a quick break here. Step away just for a moment, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. More RP3 and Company coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Baseball postseason's right around the corner. NFL's in full swing. College football's in full swing. But basketball season, well, that's creeping up quick as well within a month. Some news came out yesterday, and we need to tackle, so to speak. Pelicans added two more coaches to their staff. One is A.J. Diggs. He's going to be a two-way player, developmental coach. Give you a little background on Diggs. He comes to New Orleans after coaching stints in the NBA G League with three different teams. He was also a member of Jerry Stackhouse's coaching staff that captured the 2017 NBA G League championship. He played basketball at the University of Cal Berkeley, played in the G League for a little while before going into coaching. Hey, that's a nice addition. The big one, though, is the Naismith Hall of Famer that they added to the coaching staff. A Louisiana Tech Lady Texter legend, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, a Women's Basketball Hall of Famer, one and only Teaspoon Teresa Weatherspoon has been added to the staff of the New Orleans Pelicans. She, along with Diggs, will work closely with the team's two-way players and will accompany these players to and from their transfers to the Pelicans' G League affiliate, the Erie Bayhawks. Gentry had this to say about the two new hires. That's Alvin Gentry, Pelicans head coach. Quote, I'm thrilled to welcome AJ and Teresa to our coaching staff here in New Orleans. As we continue to put an increased emphasis on player development, AJ and Teresa will play an integral role with our younger players and will be a huge asset to our players and staff both here in New Orleans and Erie. If you didn't know who Teaspoon is, she's only one of the greatest basketball players of all time. She arrives in New Orleans after serving as the director of player and franchise development for the WNBA's New York Liberty for four seasons. Prior to that time, she served as head coach at her alma mater, Louisiana Tech, from 2009 to 14. In six seasons, she led the Lady Texters to nearly 100 wins, went to the NCAA tournament twice, and won the conference tournament in 2010. But back in the 80s at Louisiana Tech, when the Lady Texters were, along with Tennessee, one of the two best women's college basketball programs in the country, she earned All-American honors twice and capped her collegiate career by winning the 1988 NCAA National Championship. She would also go on to win the gold medal at the 86 World Cup, gold medal at the 1988 Seoul Olympics, and bronze at the 92 Barcelona Olympics. Then she went on to go play 16 years professional basketball. A lot of it early on, back in those days, they didn't have the WNBA. So she played in Italy, France, and Russia before getting with the New York Liberty in 1997. She played the majority of her career with them, including one more year with the Los Angeles Sparks. She was twice the WNBA's Defensive Player of the Year. She earned WNBA second team honors four consecutive times, made the All-Star game
five times. She's already been inducted into the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame and the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, both in 2010. And she was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts, earlier this month. Got to give it up to Gail Benson and David Griffin. They are putting together some of the smartest, most talented people in roles with the front office and the coaching staff down in New Orleans. They are dedicating the money and the resources to build a championship culture. You have a national champion, two-time All-American, one of the best basketball players ever to play in the state of Louisiana. You add her to your staff. She was known for her defense. She's also known for a legendary shot, I want to say in the WNBA Finals, that she hit a half-court shot at the buzzer to win a game. That's the type of brain trust that you're having here. This is what David Griffin looks at. He goes out and gets a former Duke star to be his general manager. He gets the best trainer, considered one of the best trainers in the league, to come over and be the trainer. Picks apart pieces, puts all these pieces together, training staff, medical staff, coaching staff, so forth. Understanding the value of development, player development is huge in the NBA. David Griffin knows this. This is, once again, another home run hire for the Pels. And to do this right as camp begins, so to speak, practice begins for the Pels, great hire. Teaspoon is a wildly competitive individual. And I can tell you this right now. She is not afraid of anyone. Never has been, never will be. In this old-fashioned notion of thinking that a woman can't coach in the NBA, I'm going to stop you right there. Then you've never met Teresa Weatherspoon. Plain and simple. That's just nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Because she's going to go in there and she's going to make those Pels players, those developmental guys, those younger guys, and those G League guys, she's going to make them better. And hopefully, with her assistance, they can make plays like this.
They've got to go the length of the floor. Teresa Weatherspoon at the buzzer of three. Oh, she put it in! She put it in! And the Liberty win game two! What a finish! Unbelievable here at the Compaq Center! This crowd is absolutely stunned. One of the most amazing finishers in the WNBA. And there'll be a game three tomorrow afternoon.
They ended up losing that three-game series. That was the 1999 WNBA Finals. But the Comets, who had won game one, the Houston Comets, they were top-seeded champs out of the Western Conference. They thought they had won. There's actual confetti starting to fall from the rafters, and the fans are celebrating, thinking that they had just won the WNBA championship, and Weatherspoon takes the ball up the court right past the halfway part of the mark of the court and just throws up a perfect shot that drains it. And you just see all the fans in attendance that are like, what? What just happened? Great college player, great pro, good coach. A slam dunk, pardon the pun, hire for the New Orleans Pelicans. David Griffin just makes sensational move after sensational move. Teresa Weatherspoon now added to the Pelicans coaching staff. Let's go do it for hour number one. Coming up, the Black and Gold Report with John J. Hendricks right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Here is the Dickies Black and Gold Report. Dickies, your home for all your tailgating needs.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And it's Friday. It's 7 o'clock. It's time for the Dickies Black and Gold Report, which means we're going to welcome on to the ARCO Equipment Hotline our good friend from Canal Street Chronicles. He's also a Saints contributor for Forbes Sports. It's the one and only John J. Hendricks. John, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself, sir?
Doing well, doing well. All right, man, let's go back. Let's go back to last week. So, no Drew Brees. They're on the road. They're in the elements at Seattle, home of the 12th man. And Teddy Bridgewater was efficient. And Alvin Kamara had a beast of a game. And the defense played well, especially early on. Your takeaways on what you saw with the Saints finding a way to win a ball game on the road outside without Drew Brees?
Well, look, I think, first of all, they set the tone early, right? And they were able to stop them defensively, and then they were able to get the punt return and get a leg up and kind of give some breathing room for Teddy Bridgewater if he had any nerves and all that good stuff, which I feel like he probably did have a bit. And then, you know, Seahawks come back, score, and then the Saints kind of just took over the game, right? They get the defensive touchdown. They were able to move the ball pretty well. They were able to get some real good stops on fourth down, which, you know, Cam Jordan was quick to describe, like, that's kind of like getting the turnover with it itself. So, look, anytime you can get a win in the league, it's a huge deal. Right now, the Saints going up to a hostile place in Seattle where they were so good, 15-0 in September, getting back to 2010. That's a huge, huge, huge tribute to Sean Payton and the company. I think he out-coached Pete Carroll that whole entire game.
We're talking with John J. Hendricks. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, your thoughts of what you saw from Teddy Bridgewater? I know there were some complaints afterwards, which I guess Saints fans can't help themselves. Well, Teddy didn't take any shots down the field. Well, my rebuttal would be he didn't need to, and he was very efficient. He didn't turn over the ball. Your thoughts on what you saw from Teddy Bridgewater making his first meaningful start since 2015?
Yeah, look, I mean, the thing is, it goes back to some of the advice Drew Brees had given him before, right? It says his best advice was when you see a completion, take the completion, and that's exactly what he did. And look, it's not like he didn't look downfield, because I distinctly remember there was a play where he was trying to roll out a little bit and hit Ted Ginn Jr. He just, you know, the biggest thing is he didn't force anything. And I think that's so important for him and for everybody to remember, is that, you know, you want deep shots, but do you want him to force something, or do you, and potentially get picked off? And yeah, there might have been a bad ball or two that he threw. So look, I think all things considered, Bridgewater was able to manage this game accordingly. I think you got to be happy for the guy, because again, this is the first time he threw multiple touchdowns since 2015. He gets his first win in a long time. And look, I mean, he's just a feel-good story. And afterwards, you saw it in the locker room. If you didn't, he was, you know, pretty emotional. Locker room, he couldn't, post-game press conference, he couldn't stop smiling, couldn't stop being happy about it. So, look, I think, again, you know, I think they can unleash him a little bit more as the weeks progress. But a good starting point is what we need to take away here.
Talking with John J. Hendricks of Canal Street Chronicles. He is also a sports contributor for Forbes. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, Jared Cook, I'm going to ask you, when I watch him play and be targeted and not make catches, I start having Kobe Fleener flashbacks. I know it's only three games, and I'm not trying to jump to a conclusion, but what are you seeing when you watch Jared Cook in this offense?
Yeah, he's just hadn't found his groove yet, right? And, you know, I know he still thinks that he's got high expectations. And, I mean, we know he's got a slow start right now. But, look, I mean, give it a little bit of time. I know it's tough right now, especially that you're, you know, 3 weeks into this thing and he hasn't made the impact, you know, that probably everybody predicted him to. But, look, I mean, the thing is, I guess what I would say is they're 2-1 without Jared Cook getting ramped up, and the offense is still having success despite that, you know, minus the Rams game. So, look, I think that you can see teams try to key in on Jared Cook, and, I mean, that's opened up other options. I think that's something that's always been a factor, is that, you know, he's going to demand so much attention that, hey, it's going to open up some other options for this offense. So, look, I understand you spend the money, you want the return on investment, but look, I'll be more concerned if they're in the postseason and he can't get the ball or he can't make the plays versus week three or week four of the season.
Talking with John J. Hendricks, Canal Street Chronicles. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, what happened with the offensive line? They struggled against the Rams, but against the Seahawks,
They kept Teddy clean. No sacks were given up. They looked far better against the Seahawks. Was that just because the Rams' defense is so formidable, or did they make some adjustments during the week out there on the West Coast to shore up that offensive line?
Well, look, I think they made some adjustments, right? And the thing is that, you know, after the game, the Seahawks coaches and the players were talking about how hard it was to get after Bridgewater because, you know, the Saints kind of designed a game plan to say, hey, we don't want him to hold the ball long and to get the ball out as quickly as possible. And that's something that the Seahawks defenders were able to, you know, had picked up on and talked about. So, look, I know a lot of people are like, hey, I mean, it kind of coincides that, hey, you're looking at Bridgewater not taking shots, but he's also getting the ball out and he's not taking sacks. So, look, I think the offensive line played much better. You know, they were able to be better in the screen game, the run game a little bit. And, I mean, I don't think there's anything that should be overlooked on their success week over week. This is still a top unit, even with the Rams game. I think they got their teeth kicked in and they came back and really felt it with that very talented front seven of the Seahawks.
We're talking with John J. Hendricks, Forbes sports contributor, as well as a man with the Canal Street Chronicles. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, John, talk to me about the secondary, because it's puzzling to me knowing how athletically gifted Marshawn Lattimore and the Williams guys are back there, and they struggle. And I don't know if it's because they're playing zone and they're better suited to play man coverage. Are they being out of position? Is it just a slow start to the season for them? I mean, Tyler Lockett went absolutely bananas against them, and Lattimore has had his struggles. What is your opinion about the Saints secondary and how they've performed this year so far?
Well, look, I think, you know, anytime you're looking at this whole grand scheme of thing, right, and the fact that they are playing more zone against the receivers that they've had to play against and the quarterbacks, right? So, I mean, you got the Rams, very talented group of receivers with Jared Goff. You have Deshaun Watson, very talented group of receivers with Deshaun Watson, and DeAndre Hopkins catching balls from him. So, you know, the Seahawks are no different, especially Wilson. It was his escapability that really helped extend plays and such. So, look, I think, you know, last year they played a lot of man coverage against the Cowboys and such, and I think it's because the matchups kind of dictate it, right? So I wouldn't worry too much about Lattimore just because of the way things have transpired. I get it that, you know, it's frustrating, and you're like, oh, what's wrong with Lattimore? But again, you look at some of the way that they've coached this and scheme, they got to get more pressure after the quarterback, and they really got to get that guy down, whoever it is.
We're talking with John J. Hendricks, joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, let's talk about this week. Let's move it forward. Saints are 2-1. They welcome in the Dallas Cowboys to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome Sunday night. Tell me what's going to be the big key. Let's start with the Saints defense. What's key? Is it putting pressure on Dak? Is it taking away Mari Cooper in the downfield passing attack? Or is it bottling up Zeke Elliott? Because this was a close game a year ago. What do the Saints need to do to beat the Cowboys on Sunday night?
Yeah, look, I mean, you look back to last year's matchup, which obviously you got a lot of different faces here, right? And but still a lot of the same. So they were held Zeke Elliott in check for the most part, right, last year. And look, I think when you look at Prescott, he's not Russell Wilson. So I think if you can get the pressure you were able to get against Russell Wilson, you're going to get Dak Prescott down. You're going to force him into some bad decisions, as opposed to Wilson, who's just a really good quarterback. And nothing against Dak in his play. It's just he's not on Russell Wilson's level, in my opinion. So I think if you get the pressure there, you can kind of disrupt some of the timing. And I know a lot of people are singing the praises of Kellen Moore and kind of being very creative and such. So, look, defensively, you got to make your opportunities. You're not going to shut down Amari Cooper and Randall Cobb totally, or Ezekiel Elliott. But, you know, just limit the big plays. Try to get off the field on third down and obviously just make sure you swing some field position. Offensively, I know that they can move the ball. I think this is a game where you can try to lean on something a little bit differently. And what I mean by that is, you know, look, they're going to key on Alvin Kamara. And a lot of teams are, right, when you face the Saints. They're going to key on Alvin Kamara. So probably unleashing somebody else, like Latavius Murray, see about getting him going, because he's a guy who didn't appear too much. But look, you get off to a fast start here, try to maintain, hang in there, because you're going to trade some blows with Dallas. But ultimately, I think that they can come in here and win this game and really shock a lot of people, because Dallas is still pretty heavily favored.
To further that point that you just made, John, on the offensive side of the ball, you said get other guys involved like Latavius Murray and else. You know, Michael Thomas, Dallas is going to cue on him. So who do you think could have a big game on Sunday? Is it Ted Ginn Jr. or is it Jared Cook? Is it one of those guys that could step up and be a big target for Teddy Bridgewater, be able to move the ball down the field?
Yeah, look, I think Cook is one and Murray is another one. You know, I think it just depends. I know he hasn't practiced this week, but Traquan Smith, if he gets a chance to play, I know he's still bothered by the ankle, but, you know, good news, he's not in a walking boot or anything like that. So we'll see what happens there. So somebody else has got to step up, whether it's Austin Carr, Lil Jordan Humphrey, if he's playing. You know, you got a lot to figure out here. They haven't brought in or signed a veteran wide receiver, so you've got to get that production. Another guy I'll give you is Josh Hill. I think that they can move him around, try to get him the ball, especially in those two tight end sets, and they can find some little success there.
Wrapping things up here with John J. Hendricks. He's a Forbes sports contributor. He's also the man there at Canal Street Chronicles. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. All right, John, wrap it up with this. What is your prediction for Sunday? Do the Saints pull out the win? And second part of that question, is this a must-win for them, or did they already get that must-win last week?
I think they got that must-win last week for sure against the Seahawks. And, look, I don't think it's a must-win because, look, I think best case they came out of September in the first place 3-1. It was hard to see 4-0, but if they're 2-2, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I guess I will say this, that, you know, going back in the history of this game with the Saints and Cowboys, you know, they've only beat them twice in the Superdome since 1988, so only 2009 and 1994. So Saints have a better record at home against them, you know, 7-2. And, you know, they swung the pendulum. They're 11-6 in their last 17 games against the Cowboys. So I feel good about this matchup. I know it's going to travel well. You know, this is becoming an interesting matchup anytime these two play. But I feel like the Saints can squeak this out. I don't think it'll be a blowout by any means. And that Superdome crowd is going to come in and absolutely be on fire. And they need them to help win this game.
John, appreciate your time. As always, and the insight, keep up the great work there for Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. Brother, let the folks know when you got something new posted.
Sounds good. It'll be soon.
All right, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you.
John J. Hendricks with our Black and Gold report there, giving us all things about the Hoodats. Once again, Sunday Night Football, Cowboys at Saints. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. That'll be pregame 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock this Sunday. We got to take a quick timeout, but when we return, because it's just not about me, it's Louis Prejean as well, producer extraordinaire, it'll be time for my rant of the week right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. New poll question is up right now at 103.7thegame.com. You got to check it out. It's very simple. Who should win? Which Astros ace should win, rather, the American League Cy Young Award? Justin Verlander, Garrett Cole, we need your votes. Go to 103.7thegame.com right now and vote. Astro fans, you tell us who you think is most deserving. Is it Verlander or is it Cole? You can't go wrong either way. But we just want to know your honest opinion. So go vote right now. Speaking of opinion, it's time for my rant of the week.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now! Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
To all my Saints fans, to all those Teddy Bridgewater haters, time for you to zip it. I'm tired of hearing you whining. Tired of hearing you complaining.
He doesn't throw the ball like Drew Brees does. He doesn't throw for 350 yards. He doesn't throw the ball downfield.
Shut up. Tired of hearing it. I've said it over and over again. And I thought venting about this throughout the week would have got this out of my system, but it doesn't. It did not. Guys, it's time for a reality check. Let's be honest with one another right now. You've been spoiled. You've been absolutely spoiled for more than a decade with number 9, Drew Brees, as your quarterback. Did you think it was going to last forever? Did you have your head in the clouds thinking, oh, it'll be great, Drew Brees will play forever? We'll never have to worry about making an adjustment at quarterback. Come on now. You knew this wasn't going to last forever. You knew eventually he was going to get hurt. You don't want that to happen. I understand that. I can appreciate that. But find someone to give you a hug and then give you a swift kick in the rear end to get over it. Drew Brees will come back. Will he be the same Drew Brees? We don't know. But you have a good backup quarterback. And ever since Teddy Bridgewater came to the Saints, been a lot of you guys been pushing back on poor Teddy Bridgewater the whole time. We want Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill's the better quarterback. Taysom Hill. First of all, no you don't. No you don't. The guy who plays special teams is not your backup quarterback. He's third string at best. Teddy Bridgewater is a good dude. He is well-respected in the locker room. The front office believes in him. Sean Payton believes in him. And this is the same front office and the same head coach that believed in Drew Brees when no one else did. Remember that? Did you forget about that? Did you forget about this is the same office, front office and head coach that did that? Teddy Bridgewater is not Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater will never be Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater will never put up the numbers that Drew Brees does, plain and simple. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. But that does not mean that he can't lead you to wins. That does not mean that he can't be a serviceable quarterback in this league and help keep your team afloat until Drew Brees comes back. This constant barrage of, well, Teddy didn't do this or Teddy didn't do this, blah, 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 blah. Stop your whining. Man up. Appreciate the fact that you have a decent to good backup quarterback to keep your playoff hopes alive while your Hall of Fame quarterback is injured, because there's 30 other teams in the NFL that do not have that. Be grateful and stop your whining and complain and support your damn quarterback of your team right now. Stop wishing it was someone else. Stop wishing that he wasn't there. Blah, blah, blah. Be appreciative of who you have and shut up. Plain and simple. And support your damn team. I'm over it. That's going to do it for my rant of the week. Y'all done worked me up into, got my blood pressure rise just out of control. I can't even put words, formulate them properly. I'm going to have to calm down. I'm going to have to call my wife during the break. She's going to have to calm me down. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Mike Dettillier will join us. The one and only. Talk LSU, we'll talk Saints. Right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome to the weekend kickoff with Mike D. Time to discuss the very latest regarding the Bayou Bengals and the Who Dats. Here is college and pro football analyst Mike Dettillier.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company, and it's time for us to catch up as we do every Friday morning with the one and only Mike D. Mike Dettillier. Mike, good morning to you, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Well, let's get right to it, man. I do want to talk a little LSU, even though they're on the bye. So let's start things off with the Tigers. Went on the road, got a win in SEC play against Vanderbilt. Anytime you get a road win, anytime you get a conference win, that's a good thing. But Coach O was not too pleased with, in particular, his defense's inability to be able to tackle. So my question to you is this. Why do you think they've struggled since the opener? They tackled well against Georgia Southern, but Texas, all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, Mike, they just haven't been able to tackle very well. It's kind of curious. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's the same thing with me. And I've talked to Coach O about it, and it's sort of a bizarre thing with him, too. Tackling's all about leverage, setting your feet, getting the right angle, wrapping up. And they just haven't done it well. And that's unusual for an LSU football team defensively. They've always been noted as a team fast to the football, fast to the ball carrier, good open field tacklers. And yet that hasn't happened this year. And every year is a new book. And this is a real a strange one where they have not been able to tackle well in space. And I know they've all kind of run it through their heads and trying different things to try to correct it. I wish I knew, because I would have told him what to do to change it. But they just haven't done a good job of it. We see it a lot early in the season, not only in college football but in the NFL. A lot of it having to do with the fact they don't practice anymore in pads. You know, it's not something live hitting they do a lot of. And I just think it's becoming much harder today. You can't simulate that. They're doing some different things drill-wise to try to help, but it's an order of concern right now. I think much more so than the injuries, because you're going to get those guys back injury-wise. But why is this team all of a sudden not being able to tackle in the open field is sort of strange, really is, especially for LSU, because they've always been noted for a team that's been a good tackling team.
And, Mike, you could tell Ed O was frustrated about it after the game and during his Coach O show this week. You could tell that he's kind of fired up about it and that they've been going to be working on it this week, as you indicated, with them working on drills. Let me ask you the other thing that Coach O talked about, Mike, was Christian Fulton. They're going to play around with moving him into the nickel corner role, and your thoughts on that, and why do you think they're making that move, or at least considering it?
Well, a couple different things. One, the loss of Todd Harris is huge in the secondary. A lot of people sort of poo-pooed that we next man up. Yeah, right. I saw the next man. He couldn't handle what Todd Harris did in the secondary. LSU plays three safeties about 70% of the time, which means you're three-quarters of a starter in that scenario. But college football has changed like the NFL. And what you're seeing a lot are teams putting their top receivers in the slot. They want the mismatch. So if I put him in the slot, now he's up against your third corner. This happened a couple years back that LSU moved Tre'Davious White, who was a really good outside corner, inside, because they had seen it there too. And now you're starting to see it more and more again. Your matchups aren't favorable with you. And so that's why I think they're giving Christian an opportunity to play in the slot, because so many teams now are doing that with their slot receiver. They're putting their best receiver there. Texas hit big with Devin Duvernay. Then they put him a lot in the slot. He didn't match up well. And so they're going to try this out and see how it goes. The only thing with that is they have a lot of young guys in the secondary corner, but not a lot of experience. And Cordell Flott is the next man. They want to see, can he handle the outside cornerback position? But it's the ever-changing world of football. Just moving around a little bit, and the fact that you're going to play in a host of teams as you're coming up into the SEC schedule, that are moving top receivers inside to the slot. And so you want to try to match up a little bit better. That's where they're giving Fulton an opportunity to see how well that works out. He can handle the slot. That's not the issue. The issue is how well could Cordell handle being your starter outside on the edge. That's the big question mark. And one of the things, too, with injuries is to watch the progress of Rashard Lawrence. Because in the Texas game, you saw how big of a difference he made. He was in the backfield more than Texas running backs were. And then he gets hurt. I think in college football, similar to the NFL, that everybody talks about edge pressure. And there are a few guys that can do it. But, man, that ability to put that pressure from the inside like Lawrence can is so huge today, college pro football, because you take away his launch pad. He can't throw the football from in the pocket. He's got to move around. And so those are some of the things that they're finding out real quick, and it's why they got, what, 8 commitments from defensive linemen this year for 2020. The world is sort of changing, and you've got to adapt to that change. But I think the big question mark is, can Cordell Flott handle the outside cornerback duties? Fulton can handle the play inside, but Cordell's a true freshman. That would mean you would have Stingley and Flott, two freshmen, starting at corner.
We're talking with Mike Dettillier here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mike, I want to go on to the other side of the ball quickly. Ed Ingram, been reinstated. He's now back at the university, back as a member of the football team. We know how gifted he is because he started as a freshman and he was a terrific prospect coming out of high school. Where do you think his role is going to be, and how long before he can earn some real minutes in a ball game, especially considering he hasn't played football in more than a year?
Well, he's going to play, and he may start against Utah State. I mean, as a true freshman, he was the best offensive lineman LSU had as a true freshman. Always been noted as a really good run blocker. He's physical. He's aggressive. He does a nice job finishing off his blocks. Haven't watched film on him and watched him in 2017. He got better as the season went along as a pass blocker. I think him being out a year and more than a year, I don't think it's going to affect his run blocking. He's in much better shape today than he was a freshman. I thought he was a bit heavy, but it didn't affect his play. And he can still move his feet well. He's aggressive. The run blocking part and the physicality, I don't have a question mark with that. It's as a pass protector. Because there are little details as a pass blocker. Your setup, your leverage, how you use your hands, giving up maybe space inside with a pass rusher. That those little technical skills, that may be where it sort of takes a little while for him to come back. But I expect he'll play, and I wouldn't be shocked. He starts against Utah State. He's a cut above. I mean, he really is. He's not only a really good college player. He's playing in the NFL because for a big man, how well he can move people off the mark, his quick feet, his movement skills, he had become much better as a pass blocker. No, he's a next-level player, and he's going to play left guard. Now, Adrian McGee's done a solid job there, but Ed Ingram's a different guy. I mean, and so if he's anything close to what we saw in 2017, it won't take him long to readjust back into being a college player.
We're going to take a quick break. More of our conversation with the one and only the college and pro football analyst extraordinaire Mike Dettile with the Weekend Kickoff. After this quick timeout, you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. And we're going to continue our conversation as we do every Friday morning with the one and only Mike Dettile. Mike, let's talk about the Hoodats. Give me your initial thoughts on what you saw and what the team was able to accomplish on the road in the elements there at Seattle last week.
I mean, it was shocking. You know, at the end of the third quarter, you're up 27-7. Now, you might have thought the Saints would be winning, but 27-7, this was a football team that had not lost a home game in September since 2010. I mean, they had been 15-0. Not only do they have home field advantage because of the noise, but they got a weather advantage too. You know, you thought you'd go in Seattle in September, you know, you'd get a nice day there. You figured wrong. It's rainy, it's dreary, it's windy, everything else. And the Saints dominated play there. The score at the end is no indication of how they had complete control of this football game. And you got unconventional scores where you got a punt return for a touchdown, and then you get a scoop and score for a touchdown. So that was the thing, you know. And some Saints fans, they always predict a big win. So maybe some of them thought it. But come on, if you were rationally thinking, nobody thought this team would be ahead 27-7 at the end of the third quarter. It was stunning to see it on the road. And, again, you won in every phase. But I was so impressed with the special teams, which I'm a big stickler for. I think that probably wins you 4 to 5 games every year if you win in that department. And you saw it with the punt return with Deontay Harris. Thomas Morstead was just terrific. You know, he averaged 54 yards a punt, but his net was 52. So they gave up squat in the return game. And J.T. Gray, again, comes up big in the special teams department. So you won that department. The one stat, if you showed me before the game started, I'd have said the Saints win. Russell Wilson threw 50 passes in that game. I know one thing, in doing the numbers, when the Saints and Drew Brees throw the football 48 times or more in a game, they win 12% of their games. You don't win that. And they did a good job stopping the run. But, you know, I'll be honest, Chris Carson sort of stopped himself. I don't know if he
kept falling down, Mike.
What kind of shoes to wear or whatever. But all around did a great job. Teddy managed the game extremely well. I thought he threw the football. He was efficient in that manner, got rid of the football fast. And the best player on the field was Alvin Kamara. I mean, he was just awesome again when you watch him play. And they won the battle up front in the trenches. I think he gets overlooked at times. But that's, to me, you might say old school, but it still wins a ton of games. So, beating Seattle out there, that's a tough accomplishment. It really, really is. And what was interesting after the game and doing the coaches show, Coach Payton brought up, kind of unsolicited, we got to get Dante Harris more involved in our offense. He said, you know, 5 or 6 offensive plays is not going to cut it. With his big play skills, we got to get him the football 16, 18 times play-wise. You're seeing now trying to expand the offense a little bit more to get Harris more involved in the offense, especially in the wide receiver screen, jet sweeps, that sort of thing, where he's going to touch the football more than just as a return man. And also, too, they got to get Jared Cook cranked up. Another week where he drops the football, with a catch he should have made, and they got to get him cranked up. Because he's a big part of this offense.
We're talking with Mike Dettillier, part of our weekend kickoff here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Mike, what you saw from Teddy Bridgewater is very efficient. No turnovers, no sacks, couple touchdowns. Do you feel like Sean Payton is kind of tailoring his offense to fit what the skill set is of Teddy? And could we see that be expanded starting this week and moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two different guys here with Breeze and Bridgewater. So you got to adapt. And, you know, you got to do it a different way. You got to win it a different way. They didn't need Taysom Hill to play quarterback this week. You know, and Sean's smart. He doesn't need to show you all his cards at one shot. I think we'll see more of Taysom Hill at quarterback this week. But Teddy, this game was Sean Payton stick you the middle finger at everybody that said Teddy can't do it. This was his game to show you we're going to win with Bridgewater, and I don't care what the fans think. I know that we're going to do it a certain way, and I'm going to win it with Teddy. And this was his kind of stick you that finger out there to show you we're going to do it. And he came up with one of the best game plans I've seen Payton have since he's been head coach here that it really suited what Teddy can do best, getting rid of the football fast, short, quick passing game. That's what really suits Teddy best, and they got it done. So you're going to have to do it a little bit different this week against the Cowboys. That defense is fast to the football, and you're going to have to do it a little bit different. But the key was you had a running game that was not there against the Rams. The Rams shut that down real quickly, and you got beat up front almost like in a street fight. But it was really one of the better game plans I've seen Sean and his staff do, and it was tailor-made for what Teddy can do best. And I think Teddy felt more comfortable throwing the football. We talked about it last week. I think he was hesitant and at times was waiting for the receiver to get open before he threw the football. In this league, that's too late. You got to anticipate that. That's something Drew just does, that, and very few guys can do it like what he can.
Mike D, appreciate it as always, brother. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That's college and pro football analyst Mike Dettillier. He joins us every Friday morning starting at 7:30 for the weekend kickoff. Great analysis, as always, from Mike D, one of the best in the business. We got to take a quick timeout. Wrap up this hour in style. Coming up, live right here on RP3 and Company, the UL football legend, soon to be Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, Charles Peanut Tillman, going to be joining us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1 as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. The producer extraordinaire, of course, is Louis Prejean. And this is hour number three of our Friday edition of RP3 and Company. We've had a tremendous show so far. We've talked Houston Astros baseball. We've talked LSU, and we spent a lot of time talking NFL, and particularly the Saints. But now it's time for us to talk about a raging Cajun legend and one of the best to ever suit up that played for a college here in the state of Louisiana. Our next guest was a second-round draft pick in the 2003 NFL draft, coming out of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, a raging Cajun legend. He would go on to play 12 years for the Chicago Bears, helping them get to the Super Bowl. He also played 1 year with the Carolina Panthers, where he helped them reach a Super Bowl as well. He was selected to two Pro Bowls and was also named the Walter Payton Man of the Year in 2013, and he perfected the forced fumble, especially by defensive backs, knowing for punching it out, it would become known as the peanut punch. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the one and only, the UL football legend, Charles Peanut Tillman. Charles, good morning to you, brother.
What's going on?
Hey, man, good morning to you. First of all, let's start off. Congratulations on being selected to be inducted next summer in Natchitoches into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. When you got the call, brother, what was your reaction when you found out that you were going to be put into the state's Hall of Fame?
I was actually pretty calm. It didn't hit me until the next day. And I texted the chairman and was like, holy, I just woke up this morning and realized what we talked about yesterday, man. I'm in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame like this. That's pretty dope. I was just, hell, I'm still speechless. Hell, when you just said it and read all those accolades, like, I just got chills. So it's still pretty new and foreign to me. I'm still trying to, I don't know. It hasn't really seeped in yet. I don't believe it.
Well, Peanut, let's go back and talk about your career, man. I want to go back to high school because coming out of high school, you know, I know you played wide receiver in high school, and then you came to UL and you became an absolute stud at cornerback. Talk about that transition and who helped you in that development from switching over from wide receiver to DB.
Coach Bartell, he was my position coach when I was at UL, and awesome man, great coach, great Christian man. And, you know, he was like my dad the whole time I was there. We still keep in contact, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity of the time that we had him and his family. He, man of his word, he came into my house and told my dad, if your son takes care of it, hey, I'm going to treat him like my own son. I'll take care of him. And he did just that and some. And very, very appreciative of him, Coach Ballman, Coach Bussell, their coaching staff, their D coordinators. And, yeah, it was a great group of men that I was around the whole time I was at UL.
We're talking with Charles Peanut Tillman, Raging Cajun football legend, and he will be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame next summer in Natchitoches. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Peanut, talk about your time there at UL. What are some of your favorite memories? I know you were teammates with future Pittsburgh Steelers cornerback Ike Taylor as well. Talk about your time there with the Raging Cajuns.
It was fun. My only regret, though, is I wish we would have won more games. You know, although we didn't win a lot of games, I learned a lot. I learned about what people had. I learned that winning isn't everything. It's all about, you know, losing. It brings out the character. And I think that kind of really transformed my character because, you know, at that time we were a struggling program trying to get it on the winning side. And I just remember, you know, we weren't the, how could I say this? We just didn't have a great sense of winning. We didn't know how to win. And that is something that I kind of value and teach my kids to this day, but those lessons I learned when I was at UL, because it taught me a lot about myself and how to persevere and push through when things aren't going your way. And people always ask me, if you could do it all over again, would you go to UL? And I said, absolutely yes, because I learned that's kind of where I grew up and became a man those 4 years that I was in Lafayette. Like, I learned so much. I know our record wasn't the greatest, but I learned so much about myself and just I learned about life. I learned about time management. I learned about food. I learned I didn't like crawfish. I learned so much. I learned about the culture, the people, football. I learned the game of football at UL. You know, so I have some great memories of me transitioning in from a boy to a man at UL. And I mean, those years are priceless. And I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't change anything. Everything happened the way it was supposed to, and I went to that school, and it all worked out the way it was, and I'm truly grateful for it. I didn't see it then at that moment, but the way everything has played out, man, everywhere I go, I got UL Raging Cajun t-shirts, I got sweatshirts, I got hoodies, I got stickers. I got a license plate on my RV. I tailgate. I got a flag. I am UL'd out, man. That school gave me an opportunity to play, showcase my talent. I'm so grateful to him.
We're talking with Charles Peanut Tillman, Raging Cajun football legend and class of 2020 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame inductee. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Peanut, let's talk about you get drafted in the second round. You wrap up your career with the Raging Cajuns. You're a second-round draft pick of the Chicago Bears. Walk us through that moment for you when you hear your name called, or maybe you saw it scroll across the TV there on ESPN when you were selected there in the second round of the 2003 draft by the Bears.
Well, I think you called it. I heard the doom, 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 and it says you hear your name. It flashes across the bottom of the screen, and a small family draft party. And my entire house, all my aunties and my uncles and my grandparents, like everybody just jumped up and the whole house just shook. And everyone's, you know, congratulating me while I'm on the phone with the general manager. And, yeah, man, it was probably second best day of my life, you know, third best day of my life at that moment in time. I was 22. I just graduated. And, yeah, man, all that hard work that you put in, the days you want to quit, going to class, running, it's raining and cold, whatever, you're hurt, and you still get up and you go, and then they call your name, like it all paid off, you know. And that, I think that was probably one of the first things that I remember, and just enjoyed the process. And I'm from Chicago. Originally, I'm born in Chicago. And, yeah, my grandparents, they still live in the house that they raised me in. So, yeah, it was a treat for me to come back home, especially to be around my family.
Peanut, talk about your time there. I mean, you had a very good rookie year. Your second year, it got ended prematurely due to injuries. You bounced back, had a huge third season with the Bears where you helped them become the best defense in the NFL. Talk about the amount of talent and just the bond that you guys had with that defense, with yourself, and, of course, Brian Urlacher and others. You guys had some absolute monsters there on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, you know, I was very blessed to be with a great defensive head coach, and that's Lovie Smith. And Ron Rivera was our D coordinator at that time, and we just, yeah, we had some good guys. And so grateful that I got to learn the game of football at the professional level through them. And when you're around guys like Hall of Fame Bron Urlacher, future Hall of Fame Lance Briggs, you know, those guys, the level of talent, I think we were so good because we all had camaraderie. We knew each other. You know, Mike Brown, Chris Harris, Nathan Vasher. We were all Tommy Harris, Alex Brown. Like we were a good defense because we knew each other and we trusted each other more than anything. That's what made it so fun and good. And we had fun making creating havoc on the field, you know. And at the end of the day, that's why we play this game, right? You play it because you're having fun. Now the incentive is you make a lot of money for having fun, but when you're having fun and everything's going your way, man, the ceiling is. There's no limit to what you can accomplish, and I think we realized that back in that 2005 season and just had a blast. And I love those guys. That was a phenomenal year we had. Truly, truly, one of the best.
Talking with Charles Peanut Tillman, UL Raging Cajun football legend, and a 2020 Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame inductee. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Peanut, I got to ask you about the run to the Super Bowl. That was such a magical year for you guys. I know you guys came up just a little short. You had a monster game in the Super Bowl, 11 tackles. What do you remember about that run to the Super Bowl that year for you and the Bears?
I didn't even realize I had 11 tackles until you just said that. you know what? To this day, I have yet to watch the entire game. And that was back in February of 2007. So over 10 years ago, I have yet watched that game in its entirety. what I remember is we came out hot, and Devin doing his thing, returning the kick. And I just remember telling myself, like, hey, we still got a whole game to play. This is Peyton Manning we're talking about. So I know we gave up a touchdown, and it was a blown coverage miscommunication. And then the rain came, and it didn't stop. It just kept coming and coming and coming. But, yeah, it was a great experience. All my family was there. I had Coach Bartell there. I had him there so he could experience it, all the hard work he had put in to help me get to where I was at. So, yeah, it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun. We had all these interviews we had. I must have said the same thing. Picture me talking, having this conversation with you the whole week for about an hour. That's what media day was like. I do remember that. I don't mind talking to the media, but when you make me say the same thing for a week, I got a problem. There's a picture of me like with my head on my desk trying to like tell the media, like, man, I'm done talking. I said the same thing. What is Peyton Manning like? How do you guys prepare for him? Like, it was the same thing every single day. But the overall experience was fine. Because when I went to Carolina, we went to our Super Bowl, I knew everything. I was trying to prep the guys, like, hey, you know, take your time. We're here for a week. I know why you're here. I know it's fun, and we got parties and whatnot, but just know why we're here, man. We're here. We can party and go out and really enjoy ourselves after we win this Super Bowl, man. But let's take care of business. And, you know, I think guys appreciated that, especially when you've been there before. You kind of know the lay of the land. You get a feel for how the week is going to go. All good times, though. All good times. Great experience. I can say, yeah, I've been to a Super Bowl, but I would rather say, man, I won a Super Bowl.
We're talking with Charles Peanut.
I can't believe I still lost two Super Bowls. How corny am I?
Come on, Peanut. Come on, man. You're still a Hall of Famer, brother. That's all that's
there
all that matters.
There you go. Okay, yeah. There you go. Still a Hall of Famer. Yeah, I like that.
We're talking.
Bring me back up. Way to pick me up.
There we go. We're talking with Charles Peanut Tillman, UL football legend and Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame 2020 inductee. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Peanut, I got to talk about the peanut punch, man. You perfected this move. It's named after you now, about forcing fumbles. There were games where you forced three fumbles or four fumbles in a game, and they nicknamed it the peanut punch. Where did that come from, and how did you perfect that, brother?
I don't know. Actually, it started at UL. We played Wolford College, and my high school coach, Rodney Southern, just kind of mentioned it about, you know, you would have had four fumbles if you'd have just stuck your hand out or whatever. And I mean, I probably had a couple of forced fumbles my rookie year. And then I think he was the guy that like really put it on my radar. So I just kind of started punching it out, and it kind of carried over to the league. And my first NFL game, we played the San Francisco 49ers, and I had a forced fumble, punched the ball out, and it kind of just took off from there. The crazy thing is, I don't think people really appreciated it or paid attention to it till later in my career. I don't think they really noticed it until 2011, and I had been doing it since 2003. I think the Midwest, like people within in the NFC North, like Green Bay, Detroit, and the Vikings, I think all those teams knew what I was doing, but the rest of the league, I don't, for whatever reason, they didn't really pay attention to it. So I just was like, all right, well, I'll fly under the radar and just keep punching these things.
We're talking with
so
Charles.
It worked out for me.
Talking with Charles Peanut Tillman, UL football legend, and a Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame inductee for the 2020 class. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We'll wrap things up here with this, Peanut. I know, you know, two-time Pro Bowl selection, first-team All-Pro selection as well. You were on teams that made it to the Super Bowl twice, but I know how much it meant to you to be named the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year in 2013. Was that just talk about that honor and receiving that honor and what that meant to you?
To this day, still my greatest NFL accomplishment. I didn't campaign to win that award. It was just my wife and I, our foundation, us giving back. And I mean, it's nice to be recognized for what you do, but we did that just because of our daughter, Tiana, who received a heart transplant. So we started our foundation and we were trying to give back and bless others like we had been blessed. And, you know, to get recognized for something, it really made me realize life's not just about football. It's not about winning. It's just about love, man. Loving other people, helping other people. And that's my off-the-field mission, really, is, hey, man, you see a need, fill a need. Help somebody else out. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with a financial contribution. You can help somebody by running to the store, picking up the phone, and just listening to them, just whatever. We all go through, you know, trials and tribulations, and we all need help. I didn't make it to where I am today without the help of a lot of people. So many people helped me get to where I am right now. And I'm grateful for that. And we were down at a time in our life when our daughter was, you know, she was dying of some heart disease. And a mom, someone stepped up to the plate and said, yeah, I'll donate my son's organs. And our daughter was the recipient of that heart. And I mean, that's powerful, you know? In your darkest hour, in your moment, you're sad. The doctors tell you your child's no longer living, and they ask you, can you donate your son's organs? And you say yes. And then you change the course and save, I don't know, 15 other people with organs and tissue and things like that. Like, that's a lot. So I'm all about helping other people in their dark time, because we all need help. We all need help. And that award, man, yeah, it means a lot to me. It means a lot because of who Walter was and what he stands for.
Peanut, appreciate you making the time for us. Once again, congratulations on a tremendous career in the NFL. Decorated player, Walter Payton, NFL Man of the Year. But the work that you're doing with the foundation that you mentioned there, my friend, that's obviously the cornerstone foundation that you and your wife created. Keep up that great work, and thank you so much for everything that you're doing off the field and post-career, brother.
Oh, man, thank you guys. And I know all my Cajun fans out there, I love y'all. I think the Raging Cajuns is the best school in the state of Louisiana. So if y'all ain't doing nothing, man, y'all make y'all way down to Lafayette Cajun Field, and y'all go check out them Cajuns. They got LSU. They better than UL. What's the other one? Monroe. They better than Grambling. They better than Southern. They better than Tulane. They better than La Tech. They better than. They got so many schools in Louisiana. I can't even keep track of them all. But y'all go check out them Raging Cajuns.
Peanut, appreciate your time, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a good one.
That's Charles Peanut Tillman, soon to be inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. UL. Raging Cajun football legend, and one of the best defensive backs to ever play the game in the National Football League. We appreciate his time and being gracious with us with his time. Tremendous interview right there. We'll make sure to send that out, tweet out a link to our interview in case you did not catch it in its entirety. We'll make sure to share that on our social media platforms after today's show. We got to take a break. Quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network. That's 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. And look, why wouldn't you want to look at this big, beautiful mug in high definition? Just saying. you will be pleasantly surprised. We're having a good time. It's Friday. We've talked with John J. Hendricks with the Black and Gold Report. We did our weekend kickoff with Mike D. Mike Dettillier, talking Tigers, Saints. We had a tremendous conversation with Charles Peanut Tillman, the UL football legend. You heard what he had to say, Cajun fans. He said UL is the best school in the state, and there's no reason for you not to get out to Cajun Field to support your team. That's from the mouth of a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. So he wants to see you out there for when the Cajuns host the Mountaineers of App State. But right now, it's time for us to talk a little high school football. That's right. We do it every Friday at this time. He is the man behind the prep seam at the Daily Advertiser. It's the one and only Eric Narcisse. Eric, good morning to you, brother.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. So I want to start things off with this, man. What team, what 3-0 team is most surprising to you? Is it Lafayette High being at 3-0, or is it Southside High being 3-0, or it could be both?
I think it's both. For Lafayette High, obviously them beating St. Martinville, like the way they did, that was kind of their signature win in the first three games. But now there's kind of some wonder of whether or not, you know, St. Martinville is even the team that we thought they were going to be. After their showing against Bro Bridge last week. So I think we're going to learn a little bit more about Lafayette High when they play tonight against Como. You know, we know what Como brings. We know how talented they are. So, but I would say both, because even Southside, being a first year playing varsity, I think having them, you know, having them 3-0, no matter who they played against, I think it's a big deal. So I would definitely say both, being 3-0, man. I don't think anybody could have foreseen that coming.
Which one of those two teams, in your opinion, Eric, has the better chance? And obviously they'll play each other on a Thursday night here in a few weeks. But which one of those teams do you think has a better chance of making the playoffs?
I would say Lafayette High. I think Lafayette High, one, they have a win quote-unquote, I don't want to say, you know, for lack of a better term, quality win, because you still have to think St. Martinville is going to win some games. But at 3-0, I feel like they've kind of done themselves a favor of sorts, you know, by taking care of business against a team like St. Martinville. Now, obviously, the Generette game is, you know, not going to really benefit them much. But even Patterson, you know, you think that Patterson's going to get a couple of wins because they're always so talented and filled with so many athletes. But, you know, it's going to come down to, I think, you know, I expect Lafayette High to beat Sulphur. I expect Lafayette High to, you know, I expect Southside to beat Sulphur. I mean, Sulphur just doesn't seem like they're a very good team right now. As you're talking about, that's four wins. At 5-5 in that district, you might be able to, you know, five wins, six wins, you're definitely going to, at six wins, you would think they're definitely going to get in. At five wins, I think they'd have a chance. But I expect both teams to make the playoffs. Long as they take care, they beat the teams that they're supposed to beat.
You can listen to the Southside Sharks game of the week tonight on Mustang 107.1, and you can listen to the Lafayette High game versus Como on the Rewind 97.7 FM as well. Let's talk about a team that you're very high on, VC. The Eagles had a great start to the season, beating Catholic High of New Iberia. Then they had that kind of game against Opelousas Catholic where they just got beat and they got caught maybe sleeping a little bit. I'm not for sure. They lost by double-digit points to OC, and then they bounced back this last week against Abbeville. They're 2-1 on the season, the Eagles are, Eric, and now they travel to play in the parish against a very good, traditionally speaking, Kaplan team. But Kaplan has a surprising loss on their schedule as well. What do you make of this matchup?
Definitely not a game that I'm sure it's never fun to play against Kaplan. Let's just put that out there. They're so tough, so physical, so nasty, and it's so well coached that it's never fun playing against that team. I also think it's definitely not fun playing against them when they're coming off of a loss. So I expect that to be a really tough game. I mean, I thought it was going to be a tough game before, you know, just because of what Kaplan is and how, the job that Tank Lotie does over there. But now coming off of a loss, I expect that to be a really, really tough physical game. And I think it's going to be a game that BC is going to have to score points. They're going to have to almost take the wind out of the sails of Kaplan early on to almost make them play their type of game. But it's definitely a dangerous game for BC. The OC game, you know, I think, you know, I always talked about how people were overlooking BC. I think people were overlooking OC, including myself. I shouldn't even say I was overlooking them because, you know, I'm still learning. I'm getting back into the groove of things and didn't really know what to expect of them. But that was a great performance by OC and a team that actually looks like they're going to be a threat as well. So I'm interested to see how Kaplan handles, how BC handles a very hungry and determined Kaplan team tonight.
And you can listen to that game, VC at Kaplan. That's our Vermilion Parish Game of the Week, and that can be heard on 106.3 Radio Lafayette. I want to talk about Cairn Crow. They opened up the season, jam-packed house there at the open-air Crow Dome against Acadiana. We know Acadiana High's fans travel. They suffer a loss in that game, kind of a lopsided game. They rebound with back-to-back wins. Easy win over Nish, dramatic win over Sam Houston last week. They play Washington Marion tonight, and Washington Marion's not what it used to be or what you and I remember it being, Eric, obviously, back in the day. What do you make of what Cairn Crow's been able to do the last few weeks?
Well, you know, they're doing what we thought they were going to do. We thought that Cairn Crow was going to be a team that was going to be a threat and a force to reckon with. You know, they with their you know, them running the veer, and you know, they have some talented kids with Tavion Falk. I think, did I say his name right? Pretty sure it's his name.
Yes.
Tavion Falk, Kendrell Williams, the running back. It's going. You know, they're doing what we expected them to do. We foresaw that they were going to be a talented team, a team that was going to compete, and I think people kind of got down on them after the, you know, after the Acadiana game. But you know, for the most part, I mean, they got beat by Acadiana. Acadiana does what Acadiana does. So, you know, I think it's too early to jump off the bandwagon for Cairn Crow.
You can listen to the Cairn Crow Game of the Week with Ben Love and Blaine Viator on Z105.9 tonight. Let's talk about STM Neville. I'm going to assume that's where you're going to be placed at tonight, Eric. That is a monster game. Back in the day before the split, that would have easily been a state semifinal game or possible state championship matchup. What do you make of this STM versus Neville game that will be tonight there at Cougar Stadium?
Yeah, I'll actually be at the Notre Dame Turlings game, but that's going to be a high-scoring game. You know, and the thing is, we always talk about St. Thomas More's offense, and rightfully so, but I think because they're so good offensively, we tend to forget about their defense. You know, and so I'm interested to see how well their defense is going to play against another high-powered offense. They did a great job against Barb, but I feel like Barb kind of got away from what Barb does well, and it's kind of really – made Mesh throw the football probably a little bit more than I expected them to. So I expect it to be a high-powered game and a high-powered offensive game. I just think I'm interested in seeing how does STM, you know, kind of handle the weapons that Neville has. So I mean, this is a great, great schedule when you in terms of high school football. This might be, if not the best, we could definitely top two in the first 4 weeks of the season.
And, of course, you can listen to the STM game tonight right here on 103.7 The Game with Danny Jones on the call. I want to ask you about the game that you are going to be going to. My bad. I should have asked you beforehand, Eric. I just assumed you'd be at the STM game. But you're going to be Notre Dame Turlings. What are your thoughts so far on the season? It's early, about where the two programs are currently at right now heading into week four.
Well, when we talk about, you know, surprises, I think Turlings has to be right up there with when you're talking about being surprised about a performance or a start to a season. Them being 3-0, I wasn't expecting them to beat Como, and they successfully did that. This is going to be, you know, this is one of the better rivalries in the area, if not the state. And, you know, it's not going to be easy for Turlings. Like I was talking, when I talked to Dane Chaponche, he was telling me, look, man, when we played Notre Dame the last couple of years, the biggest issue is we don't score points. And we've got to find a way to score points. And if they're going to, you know, in order to do that, they're going to have to score points. And they're hoping to, all year they were talking about the need for hitting big plays and creating big plays in the passing game and taking shots. And they've done that in the first 3 weeks. Are they going to be able to do that against a well-coached, great defensive team in Notre Dame? That's going to be the difference. That's going to determine whether or not Turlins is able to pull off what would be an upset. I mean, people, I know they're 3-0, but I don't know a lot of people outside of the Rebel faithful that's really giving them a chance to knock off Notre Dame. Notre Dame did a great job. You know, they got burned for a couple big plays against Como last week because they were so focused on taking away the run that they allowed Malik Nabers to hit two big plays for touchdowns. But they made adjustments and were able to come away with a win. I just think if Turlins is going to pull this win off, Sammy LeBlanc and that passing game are going to have to hit some big plays.
We're talking with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Eric, I want to ask you about LCA, in particular their offense. I know they played Acadiana last week, and Acadiana could very well be the best team in our area and a legit state championship contender in 5A. But they only scored 7 points against Westgate, and they struggled to score against Acadiana. What do we make of LCA's somewhat struggles on offense? I know they had 51 points, but that was against Northside, who is obviously struggling immensely. What do we make of LCA, the Knights' offensive kind of struggles?
Oh, well, I mean, it's simple. I mean, I said that all along, especially after that first game against Westgate. They had quarterback issues. And if they don't get, though, I don't know if they're going to be able to hide it when they play against other Class 2A teams. But when they play, you know, playing against Acadiana, I thought they did a great job against Acadiana. I thought, you know, their defensive line, I mean, kind of held their own for the most part. You know, to say that they were going up against a 5A school, I felt like they had a chance, you know. But they have quarterback problems. Now, coaches might not say it. You know, even the fan base might not say it, but they're missing Zach Claymore. And there's not another Zach Claymore walking through this door. So their issue is going to be, it's going to be vital for them to create offensive plays. And I don't know how you go about that, because even the running game was almost non-existent against, you know, Acadiana. Now, they thought that they could just throw the ball against Acadiana after seeing what they saw on film. They felt like they could get some big plays in the passing game. So I'm interested to see how they do moving forward against other 2A schools, but it's going to be – they have to get the quarterback situation rectified.
Eric, appreciate you taking time out for us as always. Enjoy the Turlings-Notre Dame game. That should be a dandy of a ball game. And keep up the great work over there at the Daily Advertiser, my friend.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You guys have a great weekend.
That's Eric Narcisse, high school editor/reporter for the Daily Advertiser. One of the best in the state. We appreciate him joining us every Friday, breaking down the Friday night football action on tap across Acadiana. We got to take our final timeout of today's show. We'll wrap things up. Lewis and I will make our picks for the weekend, Cajuns and Saints. Ooh, and I think Lewis got some inside information from one of our guests earlier. Oh, yeah, I saw what you were doing. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company as we close things out on this Friday edition of the show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Reminder, we have our poll question of the day. We'll leave that up throughout the weekend, let you vote on it through the weekend. We'll give our final results on Monday, which is perfect because our poll question is, which Astros ace should win the AL Cy Young Award? Should it be Justin Verlander, who already is at 20 wins, or should it be Garrett Cole, who's going for 20 wins on Sunday? Regular season ends on Sunday for the Astros. Right now, voting is 85.7% of the vote is going to Garrett Cole, with Verlander getting 14.3%. My vote, my opinion, look, it should be Garrett Cole. And for just this reason, the stats are so similar, but just for this reason. Verlander's already won an American League MVP and a Cy Young. Oh, by the way, he married Kate Upton. Let's not be greedy here. Give the Cy Young to Garrett Cole. That's just my two cents. You can go vote on the poll question at 1037thegame.com. for the rest of the day. Louis Prejean, producer extraordinaire. I'm calling you out.
Let's do it.
We were going to make our picks, but you decided,
yeah,
in a shrewd move, to use one of our guests to get intel for making your picks for this weekend. We're going to pick Saints-Cowboys, and we're going to pick Cajuns-Eagles.
Ray, you have to understand, I went 1-2 last week. So I'm determined to get this week right, even if we're picking two games. Because I went 1-2, and I'm sorry for I went behind your back to get this information, to get this opinion that I needed, some advice. But yes.
We won't say which guest it was.
Not until we pick.
We will protect your the relationship that you're trying to build there by getting intel for picks. But I'm going to let you go first then, there, big boy, since you decided to go ahead and use one of the guests to help you with your picks. So you give your picks first. Let's start. LSU's on the bye, so we're picking Cajuns. UL is at Georgia Southern. Cajuns, Eagles, go.
I like the Cajuns. I'm becoming more of a believer in them because I picked them at 7-5. I think they might go higher than 7 wins this season. So I'm liking the momentum they're on. I'm a big believer in that offense. I'm going Cajuns over Georgia Southern. And I think it's going to be like they win by 2 scores at least.
So, 2 scores?
Yeah, I'm thinking 30-17.
Oh, wow. Wow. I like that pick. I love the confidence. Love the confidence from you, Mr. Prejean. I'm going to go with the UL victory as well. A little bit of a surprise. It's going to be a low-scoring affair, though. That ground game is going to be huge for both teams. I see UL pulling out a 27-24 victory on the road versus Georgia Southern. It'll be close, but the Raging Cajuns pull it out. Go to the Saints.
All right, so now we're with the Saints. I know you said protect your source here. I know you said it, but I have to flex that I got this advice from Charles Tillman.
You got, okay.
Off air.
Okay.
This is why I reveal him, because the credibility behind this opinion. He's a 2-time Pro Bowler. He spent 13 years in the NFL, Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I had talked to him after you got off that fantastic interview, by the way, Ray.
Thank you.
Good job by both of you. I called him. I was like, hey, I'm leaning towards the Saints because I was wrong on them last week. Would you advise me to pick the Saints? And I was ready to pick the Saints. I'm going off. The Saints have won 5 of the last 6 meetings in the Superdome dating back to 1998. The Cowboys, last time they won a game in New Orleans was 2009. And then I was looking at the numbers Drew Brees put up in the game last year, and they only lost by 3. It was 18 of 28, 120 yards, a touchdown, 1 interception. Teddy can do that. But then I got the advice from Charles Tillman.
Uh-oh.
He said, I wouldn't advise you picking the Saints. I'm concerned about the DBs. I like Dak and the receivers. So I'm going in partnership with Charles Tillman here.
In partnership.
We're going with the Cowboys. Me and Peanut, we're going with the Cowboys here. And we didn't get a score, but I'd say we're going by Cowboys by 10.
Cowboys by 10.
Yeah.
So you're saying Dallas by 10.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah,
but you refuse to give a score. Okay.
We got to wrap up the show.
We do have to wrap up the show. Saints are going to win. Saints are going to win Sunday night. The Dome is going to be absolutely lit. It's going to be on fire. And the Saints find a way to win the game on a late Will Lutz field goal, just like they took down the Texans in the opener. That's what's going to happen. Take that, state of Texas. Saints, 24, Cowboys, 21. That's my pick. Tremendous show in the books. Want to thank all of our guests. Want to thank Louis Prejean. Y'all be safe out there today. Be kind to one another. And y'all have a tremendous weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.